It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
Right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all here on this Saturday. And a lot to talk about here as we are in the first couple weeks here of snapper season, but also trout
snapper
fishing.
Snapper season, Ian?
I saw over the last weekend. Also, trout fishing's been good, and there's stuff to talk about in the woods as well. And good to see Captain Mike still on the recovery and in here. Let me point out something. You had a bionic knee put in. We talked about this last time.
Yep.
You had a bionic knee put in, and what did you do last weekend?
I went fishing.
You went snapper fishing. I just want to point out, all right, I'm going to point out to my friend here, when you feel sorry for him, just understand that he is, you know what, I'm only making fun because I'd have done the same thing because it did lay out some, so, but the man has got a bionic knee and he went fishing anyway.
Yeah. Here's what was worrying me, Sean. I went down there to launch my boat at Billy Goat Hole with 48,372 other people.
Right.
And I'm sitting down there. I pull up to the launch ramp, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, it's just me and my grandson. And I thought all this out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I said, but, dadgum, all these people launching. And my grandson's going to have to hold the boat while I go.
Yeah, your grandson's
good.
I've got
to go all the way
good,
up to Cadillac Square to park my boat.
Right, that's what I was worried about. Right.
You know, and by the time I get back, I said, if somebody don't pick me up, I'm going to be 30 minutes getting back down here.
You have a replaced knee, and you're about to walk miles.
Yeah. So, I mean,
you're ridiculous.
One thing about sportsmen, I want to tell you what, sportsmen are really good people. When I launched the boat, there was a couple guys saw that it was just me and my grandson, came over there immediately to help me tie the boat up.
Really?
Yes.
Good deal.
And told me, go on and, you know, take the trailer. He'd help my grandson tie the boat up and everything. So I said, that's awesome. So I took the trailer and went all the way up just about to Cadillac Square up there, almost.
Right.
And as soon as I got out of my truck, there's a guy riding in the truck, saw me getting out of the truck. He said, come on, give you a ride, you know.
Oh, man.
Just as soon as I got out of the truck. And I said, man, this, you just don't know. This is awesome. And there's another guy getting ready to get out of his truck, too. And he weighed on him and took him down there, too. I mean, that's how nice sportsmen are.
Yep. And that's something we should all think about.
Everybody helps each other. And that was awesome. And when we came back and I put, you know, I tied the boat, I got off the boat. Well, I had a friend come help me take the boat out so we didn't have to tie it up. Anyway, I had a guy in the car right there waiting for the ferry people to get up. And I just asked him, I said, man, you mind riding me up to my car? No, man, come on, get in. So he rode me up to my truck. So everything worked out just great.
So all the worrying I was doing, I should have known that you would have had people stepping up to help. That's good. Good story.
Yeah, sportsmen are good people. I've always known that in the sporting goods business that I was in for 30 years.
Right.
You know, everybody got bad checks. You know, say our drugstores, Walmart, Dale Champs, whoever, they all got tons of bad checks every day. We'd only get a couple a year. Because sportsmen don't write bad checks. And those people that wrote bad checks probably aren't real true sportsmen. You know?
Pretty interesting to see, like, that. I've never thought about it from the other side there and how that, I never thought about that.
Yes.
But, you know, you're saying on the on giving people rides specifically to, and if y'all, you know, what we're talking about is Billy Goat Hole and launching on the east end of Dolphin Island there and how, you know, like so many times, I mean, the director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon, will say, when I say, what about these launches? He said, Sean, the launches aren't the problem. I can get launches anywhere. It's parking for all the trucks and trailers.
Yes.
And so, obviously, it's a real crunch and a big problem at Billy Goat Hole. But you point something out. People just did it. But maybe we start just I need to think about it more often that you see somebody there. We could
absolutely.
You know what it would also would do? First of all, it's the right thing to do and taking care of somebody else. But it also makes, to be honest with you, makes the whole process down there move more quickly. Could help you get in and out. You know, if you help somebody either go to their truck or from their truck back to the launch and all those things, just doing that
smoother
and it will end up paying off for you as well. Not just it pay off for you because it's the right thing to do, that's why you should do it, but beyond that, it'll make the coming and going at Billy Goat Hole move more quickly, which means you and your boat launch and takeout and all that will be more
and that's exactly
efficient.
Exactly what I did. When I pulled my boat out heading home, there was a guy walking. I stopped, picked him up, took him down to his car.
I think that's that's kind of a system that maybe people have already been doing. I just hadn't thought about it. If I saw somebody needed a ride, I would have given them a ride, but I haven't been looking for somebody. I'm going to start looking and say, hey, hop in and we'll ride you down or ride you over the launch or back to your truck.
All right, with your knowledge of Dolphin Island, you've got a place down at Dolphin Island. Yeah. What can we do to rectify this problem down there?
Well, you know,
I mean, I've got a couple thoughts on it. What's your thoughts on what we can do? Well, one thing, the ferry has got things screwed up down there.
Yep.
You know, they took a couple of launch ramps when they put the ferry in. Plus, they've got all these people waiting down there. I mean, there was
the ramps are an issue, but the ramps are not always an issue. I mean,
no, it's not. It's parking, too. Yeah, but where people are staged to get onto the ferry.
Oh, yeah, those middle lanes there.
There are people trying to get on that ferry. Sean, they were halfway down to Cadillac Square, too, trying to get onto the ferry, blocking that side. So people that had trailers, you know, in the middle there, trucks and trailers, they couldn't get out because there was cars there. I mean, it's a mess down there. It really is. Now, what are your thoughts? Tell me what your thoughts are if you could.
Well, park. I mean, I don't know
the magic wand.
Yeah,
there.
I don't
what
know.
What would you do?
I don't know how you fix the East End because you're limited. You have private homes there on the south side,
right?
And then you have, for most of it, you have private homes on the north side. Then you have a little strip of land before the marsh starts there. Right. And then you have and you have, like you said, the ferry facilities. And then past that, you have the pilots, you know, Mobile River pilots there. And then you have Coast Guard and Sea Lab. So you're limited. You just don't have space for parking. So I think, you know, you go elsewhere. But how do you go? It depends on the kind of fishing you're doing. You know, this discussion of and the state has talked about it, doing something back on Aloe Bay.
Yeah.
Okay. A launch there on Aloe Bay. For y'all not familiar, you turn at the Circle K, turn right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what you're looking at to your north is Aloe Bay, or before you get to Circle K, the stuff off your right hand shoulder to the west.
Yeah,
that's Aloe Bay.
Basically, right in that hole where the Dolphin Island
Regatta. Yeah.
Well,
coming into the rodeo site.
Coming into the rodeo site, Alabama DC Fishing Rodeo site.
Right. So that's Aloe Bay. So they talked about maybe going a little bit down to the west of like where Pelican Pub is and all that. Maybe one of the ideas, putting ramps in there. Okay. That would help with people going inshore fishing.
Yeah.
Because if you're going to go fish the shoals or the rigs up the bay or Mississippi Sound or you're trout fishing, no reason to go to Billy Goat Hole. You go there. Okay. But the problem turns around. Okay. Where do you park all the vehicles there?
Yeah.
There's only so much land.
So, but if they put a park spot there and put a park spot here, I mean, a launch ramp here and a launch ramp there, and, you know, put a couple more launch ramps down there, that would relieve.
It would relieve some of the pressure. Yes. Now, it still isn't going to, because what I'm getting to is, I don't know, you know, without, I have done some back of the envelope drawings of some they're parking decks, but don't picture a normal parking deck. I've drawn them out where, like, one car drives up and one car drive or one truck and trailer drives up and then one goes underneath and one, which would maybe, if my plan worked, double the amount of parking down there, but that'd be it down near the Goat Hole, because there's just not, there's, I mean, you got the fort down there. I mean, you don't have the room and you can't have like a big parking deck with, you know, regular ramps up and down because people can't make that with a trailer. So that's not going to happen. So the only other idea I have is what we're talking about is to have more launches other places. But that still won't solve the problem.
No.
If I am going offshore, if I'm going offshore, if I'm going out front, I'm going to go fish, you know, I'm going to go fish the mouth of the bay, or I'm going to Venice. But if I'm leaving out of Dolphin Island, I'm not going to launch anywhere other than Billy Goat Hole or little Billy Goat Hole. Makes those. Well, I would argue if I'm going west, I'll launch on the backside of the island and run down the island over. But other than that, most people are going to launch at the east end of the island. It makes the most sense for the amount of gas and time. And
my thought, Sean, is I know in the media there, beautiful palm trees, got beautiful big pine trees down through there.
Mm-hmm.
Take a bulldozer, wipe them all out. And make
planted here.
Well, I'm just telling you, make the street wider. I know it's two lane on both sides, but make it a little bit wider.
Okay.
And put parking in the media there, in actual parking. Make it
parking
all,
it in the median versus down one side or the other.
Yes, put it in the media. I mean, where you can actually get in there. Right now, you got to park in between the trees. You can't park. Cut the trees down. Make it where you can park all in the median, all up and down through there. That'll help some. And there's maybe there's some land down there somewhere that they can buy. Somebody said something about Fort Gaines. There was some property over there that they could use for parking somewhere over there. I don't know. I'm not familiar with it, but somebody was telling me that.
You know, the only thing that there you would have to go, if you're talking about the fort, you have to either go around the fort that way or go through the Sea Lab. Now, if there's, you know, there's land back there behind the Sea Lab too, but it seems to me that you would have the trouble of getting back to, you know what I'm saying, getting to it.
Well, let me tell you what. Dolphin Island makes a gazillion dollars off of fishermen.
Mm-hmm.
Collier should have somebody down there with golf carts or buggies or something ushering people around. If you had to park up a Cadillac Square, they need to have somebody up there ushering you around. If it wasn't for fishermen down there, it'd be a desert down there.
I don't know. They've changed a lot of Dolphin Island because we stay down there, and there's a lot of other stuff. There's people other than us fishing going down there. They have a lot of different events. It does help a bunch, absolutely.
Yes.
But there's a bunch of different other activities. And Mayor may be listening to the show this morning. He can send us an email and talk about it. He and I have talked about it before, and they're completely aware of the issues with building
that hole. It's a serious issue.
Well, it's a tough one, but without getting it too much in the weeds, if the city provides a golf cart for transport, I hate to do this, but it's today's world. Are they responsible? What if something happens? All these questions that would go out there. I think an idea for more launches, but you still won't. Once again, I like the idea of a launch on Aloe Bay. I like that idea, but still, offshore fishermen or people that fish inshore at the mouth of the bay are not going to go launch somewhere other than the east end of the island. It's just geography.
Yeah. Well, there's a problem, too, in that what's going to happen 10 years from now, Sean?
Oh, yeah.
Think about what it was 10 years ago. It was a problem down there, but it wasn't what it was today. What's 10 more years going to do? And here's the other thing. If we could ever get back to snapper season year-round where we don't have this absolute got to go down there Friday, Saturday, Sunday, every weekend, when somebody could go during the week, they go during the week. They won't go on the weekends because they know it's a mess down there. So it solve a lot of that problem. So if that could ever get to the point where we could just go anytime we wanted to snapper fishing, I think that would solve.
It would help some,
50% of it.
Okay, it would help some. I'm in agreement with you on obviously extended, snapper for even more days beyond where we are now, which thank goodness we're at 47 versus where we were. But I will argue that there's more people with boats today.
There's more people
in general, more people with boats, and these things are going to be issues going forward. Even if there wasn't snapper fishing, the people will go and run their boats.
Everybody give us a thought.
All right. Send those emails in. We'll talk about that. But we come back from the break. Blake Michaleski from the Mobile Big Game Fishing Club joins us for the Offshore Fishing Report, talking about some big dolphin being caught. Big dolphin being caught. We'll give you details on that and some marlin as well. And then we'll be back talking more about this right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. All right, time for the Offshore Fishing Report, brought to you by HMS Marine Electronics. For all your fishing technology by major brands like Garmin, you'll be supporting an online retailer that offers all the price savings and perks of the big box stores and more, in the industry since 2004, in the business since 2013. Garmin and NEMA certified. Visit HMSMarineElectronics.com or on Facebook, HMS Marine Electronics, featuring Garmin ultra high definition scanning sonar with stunningly clear images, side view, and clear view clarity. That means the fish have nowhere to hide. Speaking of the fish having nowhere to hide, it's time to get that offshore fishing report and where they are or where they might be. Blake Michaleski from the Mobile Big Game Fishing Club joins us again to talk about offshore fishing. Hey, man.
Hey, Sean. A lot going on. We have some tournament news, some results from this past weekend in Mississippi.
By the way, we talked about it a little bit last week. We finally got the weather, man. It was awesome, slick, laid out.
Incredible fishing.
Yeah.
And we were able to, I was fortunate enough to, we rode out on the Seakeeper boat for the boat parade headed out. And just watching these guys when they turned the corner out that pass, and it was just slick, and they lay the hammers down, and you hear the turbos spool up on these big boats. It's real cool to hear one going by all spooled up and rocking and rolling.
And that's one thing too, talking about technology, how that's changed. You've been talking about how this fishery is continuing to be appreciated by more and more people here in the Gulf as a pelagic fishery, an offshore fishery. But the technology we're chasing, these not just great electronics like Macklin has at HMS, but also on the engine side, the idea in the old days of a sport fisher doing the speeds they're doing now. I mean, sport fishers were, they were like Gilligan's Island, man. They but
yeah, poking out there 18 knots, on a, if you're doing good with your 671 Detroits, a cloud of black smoke behind you. Now it's clean as can be behind them. And in fact, Jarrett Bay, they're a custom builder out of North Carolina. They just splashed a 90-footer that will hit almost 50 miles an hour.
That is unreal for that much glass to be moving that
and
fast.
And that's just it. It's not that much glass. It's glass over wood still in the hull. So it's strong and light, but almost all the top sides is coring and carbon fiber. It has carbon fiber toilets. Let's put it that way.
That's some high fancy
titanium shafts. I mean, to say, you know, for weight save, they say 40,000 to 50,000 pounds off the typical boat.
It's unreal to see
that's the kind of engineering that's going into these things now.
And these are the kind of boats people can see that come through our area to fish, even if they're not local folks. We got some great boats here locally,
right?
But people are, like you said, seeing this area here in the Northern Gulf as a destination to come fish.
Absolutely, it's just becoming a world class fishery.
It's awesome,
and it's because of effort and our anglers, like, they travel and they bring it back home.
Right. And yeah, we had, so let's talk about what they did here last week.
So, you know, talking about big boats, the 95-foot Relentless Pursuit, a custom Jim Smith. It's a, they did it again with first place catch and release over in Mississippi, three blues and a white.
Wow.
Done deal, pulling off the same, but because of time, Relentless Pursuit took the win.
Explain to people that don't keep up because of time, meaning what?
Yeah, your GPS time. When you catch the fish, that's kind of your tiebreaker. So who was there first? Who caught it first? The big story out there was Real Addiction with a 796.9-pound blue marlin.
Wow.
So you know she was over 800 when she was caught.
Yep.
Well over, probably. And so in second place was 739. Third
big fish.
Yeah, third went to, and special shout to Sean Clemens Jr. He runs the Pearl, and his dad runs another boat, and he beat dad in the tournament. So
that
so
moment in
to,
life when
so
you beat
congrats
dad.
To him. I know dad's proud. They had in Mississippi carries a swordfish division, no monsters, but 144, 125, 123 rounded out the top three. And the big tunas continue. All three were over 166 in
really?
The top three, the first place being 182 from the Pensacola boat, the Sweet Pea.
That's fantastic.
Oh, man, incredible fishing. But the another big – and on top of the big blue that Real Addiction caught, I think the most notable fish that stood out was a tournament record of a 57.2-pound dolphin.
That is huge.
That's a big one. That's a monster. And so my buddy,
I don't know. I have to go Google what the record dolphin is.
Oh, it wasn't quite a state record, but it was a tournament record. And my buddy Nick Jones was on the boat All Man. He told me about they spotted the fish on a weed line, and they said, "Well, we got to stop and try and catch this fish." And he said it took him 2 hours of throwing things at it, letting it, you know, it would chase, it would refuse. It would disappear, and they would be like, okay, well, maybe let's move on, and it would show back up, and finally it ate a live hardtail on a
– That's what I was about to ask.
30-pound fluorocarbon. You had to go super light, little bitty circle hook just to get a bite. You can't land a fish until you get a bite.
Right.
And so you do what it takes after getting frustrated with a particular fish, especially when you've located, you got to do what it takes to get the bite.
You know, it's funny because very few of us get to see a fish in that caliber. Right, a dolphin in that caliber that we don't, because we think about chicken dolphin or smaller dolphin, people are seeing, you don't have to get some, they're not particularly finicky. I mean, they're ridiculous
in
what they'll hit. I mean, just pull something out, you got a spoon, you got a speck rig, you got whatever, they'll hit that.
Yes.
But now we're talking about a granddad of a dolphin here.
Right. And you know, of course, dolphin, just, you know, they grow fast.
Yes.
And real fast. This fish still wasn't that old, but it was old for this species.
He obviously had seen some things
He'd
before because he
stuff,
wasn't.
Right. And so they get it. You know, it's okay, I'm coming around with these boats and things start hitting the water around me. Maybe I'll not eat it.
So the two-hour process, he's refusing, he's disappearing. That's making it happen.
That's being persistent, and that's tournament fishing. When you've located a big fish, no, that's skill. And persistence. And persistence pays off, especially in tournament fishing.
Yeah. Well, good for that. That's awesome.
Yeah. And on top of that, the of the top five listed as weighed, they're 41 pounds and up. So we had five fish 41 or up.
Okay, so I was asking you last night, is this one of these is this a dolphin
year?
Dolphin year.
Okay, yeah, it seems to be. So really interesting. And, of course, you know, but as far as what we're going to go do this weekend, or, you know, if we're going to go snapper fishing, or say you want to push out a little further, I want to talk about black fins. This is it's an accessible fish.
Right.
It's a
– the other tuna.
Versatile fish. So – a lot of people think, okay, it's great eating. We can you can smoke them, make some smoked tuna dip. One of my favorites, and a Gulf Coast staple, I'd say at most of your restaurants. But also, these guys catching these big blue marlin, they're fishing a live blackfin typically. You know,
yeah.
the lure fishing, it exists when they're trying to cover water. But when you're fishing on an oil rig, you're fishing a fad, basically, you know, a fish attracting device,
right.
which is a giant oil rig. So you've located a fish. And a live bait is probably one of the best ways.
Right. Whether you're fishing for a bass in a farm pond
anything.
Or you're fishing for a blue marlin, you know, a big
live
bait. If
you never live bait for bass, you're missing out.
Oh, yeah. That's which
really
is fun.
Fun.
That's what I'm saying, though. If you're looking to catch a big bass.
Right.
If you have to challenge somebody to catch the biggest bass in the pond, I'm going to tell you go live bait.
Right.
Same thing if you're trying to catch a huge blue marlin.
Exactly.
Live
and
bait.
So these blackfins they're a vital fish for our fishery in terms of, you know, either food fish for the angler or in terms of bait, whether that be live bait or you're going to cut him up for chunk bait for yellowfins.
Yeah, and that's something we don't, you know, when we talk tuna and talk to you, everybody's thinking yellowfin. Let's talk about some blackfin and how does a guy like me, have somebody, the monkey boat folks,
well,
how do they
you know,
target
you can
them?
Make your run out to the Ram Pal or the beer can, the marlin rigs, these close floaters, that's, you're going to have a good chance to run into them, and it's not going to be just one or two, it's going to be a lot of them, and you know, good electronics, you can find them. They're going to typically hang, you know, anywhere from 200 to near the surface.
Okay.
And so the most common tactic is vertical jigging. You think of the days of wearing yourself out with a diamond jig.
Yes.
You know, and just jigging
yes.
hard.
Yes.
Well, some things have come over from Japan and the slow jigging, and you have these jigs now that will just flutter down, they fall, and I like taking guys out and I tell them, okay, just, and they say, oh, when I hit the bottom, I say, no, buddy, you're in 5,000 feet.
You're not going to hit the bottom. You'll run out of line.
Yeah. When it stops, that's a fish. Just get tight. And a lot of times, you don't have to wear yourself out. And so, you know, and I tell guys, like, man, chill out. Just,
so this
just
is not,
drop.
I'm picturing the old school, like you said, like the big diamond, the heavy diamond
jigs. They just
jigs
sink, right.
Right. And then you have to give them the motion. This one,
it just kind of flutters down like a wounded bait fish would. Say if a bigger fish crashed a school of bait and one got injured but not eaten, it's just going to flutter down. That's just easy pickings. And you know, he's going to stand out. So there's a few that are made out there, but anything that's a broad, wide, vertical type jig, it'll flutter down. And you can even – we've even used electric reels for this when we're trying to just catch bait.
Right.
When you're trying to catch a live bait and you want it to be – and that, lively, you don't want to wear it. You want to just get it to the boat.
Is that jig gonna? I mean, what's your hook ratio there, though? I mean, if it's fluttering down, you got to stay tight. I would think to be able to get a
once,
hook.
Well, when it's fluttering down, once he hits, he's tight. He gets tight too,
okay.
And then you can. And even there's been a trend to going, and I've done this, going to a bit longer rod, a little slower action, which means it bends deeper into the blank, not just out in the tip, and that gives you, you know, you can. Get some good lifting power,
yeah,
and then you can also kind of pitch the jig, say to the torso rig.
You can kind of cast
it out a little bit away and let it flutter down. Boom, you can be on. And so, but and then other than that, there's, you know, during the daytime, say in the morning, if you're needing to make bait for live baits, if you're trying to catch live blackfins, trolling works for a little. The guys are basically fabricating what amounts to a large sabiki rig and trolling it, and you'll get three or four on at a time. Then they're just sitting there fighting each other. And you just back
right.
the boat up, net them, don't
nice.
Calf them, you're netting
right.
them. And so we, you know, which is funny because you have a run on large nets on these boats, you're thinking, what are you doing that for? Why are we netting black hands?
Yeah.
Because that's our bait. That's
right.
our live
you're
bait.
Get them in with as least damage as you can so you can get them back out for
right.
a while.
Right, and you have to be gentle with them. You have right. about, and really from the time you take them out of the water, if you put them in tuna tubes, and then when you get one out to bridle up, you got about 30 seconds. And you got to do it quick, and that's what separates some of these guys. And if you take too long, typically just he's overboard. He's no good. Or you better get a bite quick.
They
got to
have that oxygen constantly.
Right. They have to – yeah, tuna or fish that have to stay in motion. That's why these guys spend – these live bait marlin fishermen spend so much money on elaborate tuna tube setups with – you know, pumping 2-horsepower swimming pool pumps to move enough water over these fish to keep them alive and to keep them frisky.
But it's also a fishery that's doing it to get live bait. But obviously, for you know, like you said, you go to some of the closer floaters and stuff. Regular folks get out there and can just enjoy it for catching
absolutely.
Them.
Absolutely, they're a great sport fish. There's even, I mean, if you want to get even more sporty, they're a good fly rod fish. I mean, you don't think about offshore fly fishing too much, but it's getting more popular on the Gulf Coast. And if you can get them up on the surface, pick one out. In fact, I know guys who target red snapper that way.
Yeah, that's
chum them up and pick one out. In fact, there's a few line class IGFA records that are within reach if people would go for them.
Might have to check that out. Okay, what else is going on your list? What's going on with
them? We've finished ironing out some more details on our combined tournament with our Memorial Day tournament. Of course, canceled because of a subtropical storm.
Alberto.
Right. So we partnered up with Pensacola Big Game Fishing Club and their international tournament, which is typically held. It's the weekend before the 4th.
Right.
And so what we're going to do is you can register at either location, but we're going to encourage pre-registration at the Pensacola website, pgbfc.com.
Okay.
Not org. We are mbgfc.org. Go there, pre-register, and it's $1,400.
Okay.
And what you can do, and that energy, and it's going to be run as a single tournament, but we can weigh at either location. And
so somebody has their boat at Orange Beach. And
right. It makes it easy. And so it's a good way for us to partner up. And it provides a framework, a contingency plan for future. It's say if they have a similar situation, we can bring them over and help those guys out too.
All right.
So it's good cross-border relationship we've got going with those guys. And then with that tournament, what they do, we're following Pensacola Club, their rules. Following their rules. So they have 106-inch kill marlin minimum. We have 110, but we're going to go with their rules. They also have a $5,000 guarantee top small boat. And so your small boat guys.
Yes.
And what they define as a small boat, traditionally it's been anything with outboards.
Yeah.
Well, with the way that's going, they've now said, okay, well, 39 and under with outboards.
Right.
Which is still a fairly sizable boat.
Yes.
But, you know, it's not there's a 65 Hydrosports out there.
I saw the picture of that. That's ridiculous.
So 39 now and under with outboards, 32 and under with inboards.
Okay.
Guaranteed $5,000 top boat prize.
Cha-ching.
Exactly. So, yes, there's some motivation for the small boat guys to get out there. Again, we highly recommend you pre-register online. Now, the big boats who are going to fish this, they also have another thing on the horizon. That's the World Cup on July 4th.
Okay.
It's a one-day, one-winner, worldwide blue marlin tournament. You get 8 hours in your own time zone. And so we've got guys in the Gulf fishing against guys in, say, Ascension Island, Cape Verde, Bermuda, Hawaii, all these top really big marlin destinations. Well, guess where it was won last year? In the Gulf of Mexico.
Really?
600-pound on the mark with on the done deal.
And seasonally, correct me if I'm wrong, but we actually, this is a very good season. Some of those places are better in the wintertime.
Right.
Right.
Places like Ascension are typically better in other times of the year. So it works out good for the Gulf because right there in July, I mean, that's a hot time for us to be targeting really big blue marlin. And just hopefully we can get some good action. Last year it was really slow worldwide, but you get in the Gulf and you got all these oil rigs and some live baiting going on and there you go. And it wasn't a huge fish that won it. A very nice fish.
It was the biggest that was caught on that day in that 8-hour
right.
period.
Sean, I say you compare it, if some of your reels, you want to compare it to a speckled trout, I say a 500-pound marlin is kind of like a 5-pound trout. Knock two decimals off. And, say a 1,000-pound marlin and a 10-pound trout. It's about this, it's in there.
Good analogy.
It's like, all right, man, that's a big one. So those guys are going to have that coming up too. And so hopefully the Gulf of Mexico can do it again this year. And then, of course, the very following weekend, we have the Junior Angler Tournament, which I'm looking forward to.
Absolutely. All right. People want details on all this, too. They can get it online.
Yes. They can go to mbgfc.org, or you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/themBGFC.
Good pictures over there, too.
Yeah.
Good pictures. So I mean, it's tough, like, during the work week when you're under the fluorescent lights until you get to see a post up, and Blake's put up some great pictures. All right. Well, we're excited about that. By the way, too, just other things offshore. How's your snapper fishing been okay?
Oh, man, it's been incredible. Seeing a lot of big pictures, or pictures of some big fish. And we were talking earlier about weighed fish and some with some actual weights on them that are 25 pounds. I mean, some big fish.
When y'all see one that's 25 pounds on a scale.
A real 25 pounds.
Not because your cousin Dwight told you it was 25 pounds, but when it's really 25 pounds on the scale, that is a heck of a red snapper.
So get out there. They're definitely, it's great fish right now. As long as you can catch the weather right, and it's been pretty good here lately.
That's for sure. Blake, thanks for your time. It's the Offshore Fishing Report brought to you by HMS Marine Electronics for all your fishing technology by major brands like Garmin. You're supporting a local online retailer that offers all the price savings and perks of the big box stores and more in the industry since 2004 and the business since 2013. Garmin and NEMAS certified. Visit HMSMarineElectronics.com. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you along. Big thanks to Blake Michaleski from the Mobile Big Game Fishing Club and, of course, Macklin Smith over at HMS Marine Electronics for making it possible. You know, Mike, I mean, we're doing you know, podcasts. We do podcasts of 30-some-odd hours of radio a week here on the station. I think of 37 hours last time I checked of unique local content. But two of those things, I think, you know, we're doing with this outdoor show, but we're doing during the week as well. We got a inshore fishing report posted up with Captain Bobby's report.
Captain Bobby.
And an offshore report posted up. Do you think there's any radio station in the country that's doing that?
No.
I mean, may have a fishing report somewhere. You know, I'm sure a lot of places have a fishing report or freshwater report in some places. But, you know, inshore and offshore posted up. And, you know, so many of y'all are listening to those podcasts. The hits are unreal and sharing those. And I'm seeing them pop up other places, you know, and that's fine. I tell the folks that if they want to use our podcast in their, like, fishing websites and all that kind of stuff, cool. We're good with that. Share. That's fine. You know, we appreciate the people thinking of us and sharing this.
I can't tell you how many people that I know that have told me about listening to Bobby's podcast.
Yeah.
You know, they miss the show on Thursday when he does it, and they go and listen to the podcast.
Yeah, they can also, you can listen to the podcast of this show, us talking about podcast on a podcast. It'll post up about 8:30 this morning. The podcast of this show goes up, it takes about half an hour after we get out of here. Put that podcast up, or you can catch the replay, of course, replay at 11 o'clock tonight and 10 o'clock tomorrow night. And as always, big thank you to Buffalo Rock and the folks with Mountain Dew and...
Mountain Diet.
Lost your mind. Come on, it's all about the diet. Joey and the gang. Yeah, thank you.
And, thank Joey Peterson. He helps us out a lot on this show, and I really appreciate it.
And introducing my friend Mike to the wonders of Diet Mountain Dew.
I'll tell you what. I have got used to the Mountain Dew now. I've been drinking it for a pretty good while, and I really have enjoyed drinking the Diet Mountain Dew.
Yep.
Seriously, that is an awesome drink.
No, it's first thing. I tell you what. First thing in the morning. The go-go power when it's time to, you know, when you got to launch the boat at Billy Goat Hole or you're heading to the woods or whatever. It's good stuff.
I don't drink coffee, so I got to have a little caffeine.
Neither of us do. Yeah. That's weird.
Yeah, I
don't. All right. So, and before we talked offshore fishing, we were talking about some ideas on things to do. Whatever ideas you have. I was about to say, you know, realistic ideas. But you know what? Some of the biggest, you know, sea changes in American culture or technology have come from people that had some wild idea. So if you got a wild idea, email us as well. Sean, S-E-A-N, at fmtalk1065.com. Or you can put it on our Outdoors Facebook page, facebook.com/fmtalk1065outdoors. Yeah, even wild ideas for solving the parking problem. I was about to say, don't give me any. No, give me wild ideas. Because
For Dolphin Island, the parking problem down there, launching problem, parking problem, if you have any idea, any suggestion, you know, maybe me and you can go meet with Jeff Collier have a talk with him.
And he's more than willing.
Oh, he's a great guy. Jeff Collier is awesome, man. He has done so much for Dolphin Island, and I know he knows that situation down there.
But there's only so much real estate, so you have to think. You do have to think outside the box. I know that's the cliche, but you have to think outside the box on this, and that's one of the issues that people have. That you say, oh, well, you just have just put some more launches in. Well, you put more launches in, you got to have more parking as well. So we're open to your ideas on that. Let us know. Drop that email to Sean, S-E-A-N, at fmtalk1065.com, or drop us a line on our Facebook page for the Outdoor Show, FM Talk 1065 Outdoors on Facebook. All right, and we'll talk about this going on. Let's talk about other thing, too. You know, we were mentioning before in the opening segment about the number of people down there. And I'll say this. It was, what will happen here in the next few weeks, it'll get back, maybe even this weekend, get back because it's rougher this weekend. But it was slick last weekend. It was the first slick weekend of snapper season.
Yes.
Now, everybody who could float something was out.
They were.
It was.
I'm telling you, I see some little bitty boats out there.
It was berserk. It was berserk. And people were on structure pretty much everywhere. And that's, you know, it's a hard thing that you go and you want to fish. And listen, we saw on the good side, let me talk about what's good. A couple of different places we went were crowded with folks. And I'm fishing public numbers or semi-private numbers, it was a public number, but it's moved by a storm or something like that. So I'm not the only person on earth that has the number. But usually you don't see three or four boats on it, but that was the situation. But in some of these spots, it was great because if you show some courtesy and drift through correctly, everybody could. If everybody acts right, you could fish on some of these bigger – you fish four boats.
Yeah.
It's fine. By the time you make your drift through, next person does, you just keep making that drift, and then you go get in line, take your turn. It's fine. Problem is, not everybody does that. You know, and that's where the trouble comes in out there. Gets a lot of people teed off, and I saw some of that going on. And you know, it's but I think it's going to be a lot better.
Some people aren't courteous. Is the situation
right
out there? I mean, like I told you,
but
about
some
earlier,
people are. Some people,
you
are,
know,
so that's
sportsmen
good
are really good people.
Yep.
But they get irritated too, just like everybody else does. If you're out there doing something you're not supposed to be doing,
right?
They just, a lot of people just don't know the difference. You know, they just don't know they're doing something wrong.
No, and there you go.
Yes.
We talk about that all the time in the boat. We go, are they just being ignorant, or are they being jerks? I mean, because if somebody's being ignorant, I'm the first one to go, you know, in the nicest way and say, okay, here's how we're doing it.
Yeah.
Everybody's kind of, you know, waiting their turn, and we're going to drift through, and that's how it's working out. All right, listen, we're coming back from the break. We'll talk a little bit more about this, plus some changes. Hey, duck hunters, on the causeway, another area slated to be added to the no motor zone. I know this has caused controversy in the past. I'll go ahead and be on the record. Y'all want me on the record? I like it. I know a lot of people are upset.
I know you keep up with that.
I'll tell you more about that when we return. All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad you're here. Yeah, and a little rougher out there this weekend than it was last weekend. I tell you what, snapper fishing wise, it was not great. I had to really work to get on keeper fish or what we wanted. I'll tell you right now, I ain't catching big fish. Yeah. I didn't land any big fish. You know, I didn't land anything. Nothing went in the box. It was more than 10 pounds that went home with us. Now, I was fishing close and all that stuff, but I tell you what, I talked to a whole bunch of people that the same was true. And
that's exactly what I was getting ready to tell you. I talked to a lot of people, the same thing. They said it was a terrible fishing day.
It was slick, beautiful
calm.
Boat running.
It was slick, calm.
Which is not the best.
Wasn't hardly moving. I mean, it just wasn't. But now,
that's a fun boat riding day.
Oh, yeah. But listen, there were some people that killed the snapper. But here's the deal.
They went further out.
Here's the deal. They got some private spots, and it makes no difference.
Right. They're that good.
It makes no difference there. Are stacked up there, and every time you stick a bait down, the fish come up to top water. You just pick the ones you want. You know?
I got them to come up one time in the morning. Got them to come up, and of course, first shakedown because I didn't fish opening weekend. We were down in Chandelure then, but you know, the chum equipment was in one place, and the chum was somewhere. You know, it was the old, oh, remember how to do this? We didn't keep them up, and they went back down. And they weren't, but tell you what, the ones that came up, they were, you know, because they're 5 pound.
Yeah.
Now, and this, remember, we talk about this. For me, 5 pound means real on the scale, 5 pound.
Right.
You know, five, 6 pound fish.
When your scale works.
Yeah, when I have batteries for the scale. We'll tell that story in a second. I'll tell you, know, so, and I obsess on this scale thing. I don't know why. It's one of my weird deals that I like to weigh fish because, and I've tried
you
to
like
teach
to
my.
You like to weigh those 6 pound trout that weigh 3.5 pounds.
That's right. Yes. And it's, you know, what's helped me do over time is I've gotten better over the years at judging fish without weighing them. Because when you catch a fish, look at it, weigh it, look at it. In your brain, I think it goes into a file, and you do a better job long-term of being able to just guesstimate fish size.
Yeah.
And, like, I mean, Mike Ward could sit with fish and do it. He could also look at, I mean, it blew me away. One time you were scoring a deer for me, and you looked at the deer, and you scored him in your head, then you scored him the right way, you know, using Boone and Crockett, and I think you were off by, like, an inch. It's unreal, uncanny ability. But so I carry a scale. Mine's finally gotten rusted up and gave up the ghost last year. So I bought a new one. I was so rushed Friday, you know, doing all these things. I get down there and I have the package with the new scale in it and didn't realize
there's a battery in it. Sure, there is, John.
No battery. Yeah, no battery.
They all come with batteries.
Battery
somebody
sold separately.
Somebody stole the battery out of there.
Battery sold separately. So I'm leaving out, you know, at 5 o'clock on in the morning to have no battery. Go out there. So we head out and ends up just like always. Two things. You know, we're fishing snapper, and I'm driving. So just because the current, like Mike said, wasn't doing very much, I actually got to drop a line. Once everybody dropped, I got to drop. I do like a drift line or just a knocker rig off the back. And two things. I don't have a scale, and it hits the lightest rod on the boat, and I catch a pretty good ling.
Real nice ling.
But I can't tell you how much he weighed. I mean, I guess I could have gone when we got back and weighed the two halves. Yeah, the two halves, because he was big enough I couldn't get him in a cooler. I had to cut him in half because I didn't bring a big cooler because we weren't going to catch a big ling.
Yeah.
But we did.
But it was a nice ling, and if I had to guess, you showed me the picture of him. He's a 40, give or take a little.
Yeah, we'll put the picture up on the yeah. I am 5'9", well, I used to be 5'10". I'm probably 5'9", now I'm shrinking. Yeah. And the fish is from my throat to the ground. Yeah. So whatever that is, however long that makes him. Yeah, it was a good fish, but yeah, I couldn't weigh him because there was no battery provided with my new digital scale. This weekend, forget about it. I would have extra batteries.
So that's the way it always works out, Sean.
You know, it's and on that close stuff, that was a spot I got is 61 feet of water. Yeah. And you know what? A spot about a mile and a half from there last year, caught another couple good ling. You know, I know the ling fishing hadn't been what it is in the past, but I'm catching a couple good ones a year out
there.
Right. You know,
yeah,
that's about
pretty good.
I tell you what I saw too. Not far out, I did run out trying to find a little better grade of fish, and we went to some stuff I had at like 21 mile, you know, between 100 to 105 feet of water. Pulled up, amberjack floating. Number one, I was surprised because really haven't seen amberjack on it. It's a little shallow.
Yeah.
But number two, the shame of somebody had to catch an amberjack and couldn't keep it.
Right.
And you know, didn't vent it or whatever, and
that's
that amberjack was dead on top of the water. So
that's the problem.
All right. Listen.
You know, we're going to talk about the ducks next week.
Yeah, okay. Just going to point this out quickly as we wrap up here. So if you'll go look with the Division of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries, they show a map for a proposal for duck season this year. Just like Big Batty has been a no-motor zone, still hunting, just no motor zone,
yeah.
Electric motors, but no gas-operated motors. Same thing proposed for bay grass. We'll go into the debate in the future. I'll tell you right now, the birds went to Big Batty last year. They'll go to bay grass. It makes for better hunting. It's a semi-refuge that you still get to hunt. Yes. I think it's a good thing, but we'll debate this going forward. All right. Prep Sports Report next. Y'all have a great one.